Hi, fantasy readers. This is Corinne Norton, your fellow book binger. And you are listening to the Finding Fantasy Reads podcast, where you can test out a new fantasy story every single week to find your next favorite author. I'm so excited to be back from our summer break. It was great to have some time off from recording so I could be with the kids while they were home. But they're back in school now, and I'm eager to bring more stories to your ears. Get ready to have a new story every week, now through May, for season two. We're starting off this season with a fantastic fantasy heist from USA Today bestselling author Joanna Reeder. Joanna takes her readers time traveling to the past and through the portals to fairy, and always includes a dash of romance. And her motto is, "A Dr. Pepper a day keeps insanity away." Stick around to the end or check out today's show notes to see where you can find more from Joanna Reeder, as well as how to enter our newest audiobook giveaway, which is dragon-themed. For now, please enjoy Silver Wings and Shadows by Joanna Reeder. Chapter 1. The pale silver cream feels cold against my face as I smear it across my skin. I'm amazed at how closely it resembles the color of my hair as I carefully smooth it across my forehead. I'd rather hide in shadows, but obscuring my appearance will conceal me better than shadows for this job.
"What made you change your mind, Amberly?"
asks my accomplice, Clay.
"A few jobs for Beauregard could pay this much, maybe more."
He's dressed the same as he always is. Going undercover as an extra stable hand didn't require him to change anything.
"You know that's unlikely,"
I say, still looking at the mirrored glass. "Unless he sets his sights higher and asks us to steal from royals."
"So possible.
Very unlikely." He looks up at me with youthful eyes and a freckled face, his brow scrunched.
"You taught me if the risk is too high, it might not be worth the reward."
My dragonfly wings flick the air, and I turn away from the mirror to study him. We're not related, but I've always thought of Clay as the younger brother I never had. He's good at thieving. He learned from the best. Me. But sometimes I forget how youthful and inexperienced he is. I won't push him into anything he's not comfortable with.
"Should I find someone else for your part?" I ask.
"No, I can do it."
He squares his shoulders in determination.
"It'll be good practice for when I thieve alone."
I don't doubt him, and I don't pity him. I had no one to teach me in the beginning when my father was taken and I was left to fend for myself. I think that's why I took him under my wings.
"Besides, who else could you call on such short notice?"
Clay smirks. I turn back to the mirror to hide my smile, right as the Honorable Lady Niam Watermoon, our client and daughter of the Viscount, walks in. Her coral-colored hair is styled in loose, flowing waves and adorned with hairpins resembling seashells. She wears a gown of gossamer-thin fabric, shimmering like sunlight reflecting off the surface of the sea, with an enormous and expensive pearl at her throat. Alarmingly, Lady Niam's round face and large, wide-set eyes are free of anything that would hide her identity. I whip around to face her.
"Why aren't you disguising yourself?"
My voice pitches a little, so I clear my throat and hope Clay doesn't hear my panic.
"I'll stand out if I'm the only one."
"You won't be the only one," Lady Niam says coolly, walking to stand next to me. She lifts the jar of silver paste to examine it. "Plenty of Fae come to these auctions, wearing masks and makeup and costume to hide their true identities. They don't want rumors spreading about their wealth, or comments that they don't need one more Kate Sith, because they already have 500 of them.
She places the jar back on the table and brushes her hands together.
But it will draw suspicion, especially after, if I'm not seen among the crowd.
She walks to Clay and ruffles his dark hair.
Are you ready?
Yes. I will keep a low profile while locating the Cabal Ushte.
He recites a little too flatly. I make a mental note to work with him on his delivery when he's talking to clients. He continues,
I am not to approach the water horse or even go near the stall where it's housed to avoid suspicion.
And to avoid getting hurt, I add with pinched eyebrows.
Lady Niam gives a slow nod, agreeing. Yes, Zangari won't hurt me, but she doesn't know you and could take off some fingers if you're not careful.
I get it.
Clay stomps a foot.
I'm not to get near the ferocious fey-eating water horse.
Good. Then, after Amberlee locates and steals the key to Zangari's stable, Lady Niam looks at me expectantly.
Yes. After I lift the key, I'll covertly leave the auction to meet Clay at the entrance at exactly midnight.
But you cannot go inside the stables, Niam warns. If the other grooms see you, they'll be suspicious. Yes, I know, Lady Niam.
I offer a reassuring smile. The second part will be a breeze. Since the key opens the door to the stall on the outside of the stables, right over the channel, there will be no reason for me to go inside. And I'm good at staying hidden. My wings flutter, catching the light with their iridescence and attracting the underwater noble's eye. And I'm good at infiltrating through tall windows and also accessing doors that sit right over channels.
She is,
Clay adds before turning away from our client.
Although she's never actually had to open a door right over a channel.
He mutters too quietly for Niam to hear.
I'll unlock Zangari's stable door and release her, I say.
And I'll be waiting in the channel to take her far away across the Sea of Neptulus.
Niam sighs, and her expression turns wistful.
Then how are you paying us?
Clay asks. The past me, before my father was taken to prison, would have shot him a look of ire. I would have snapped at him for being rude, but it's a valid question.
Niam lifts the pearl from around her neck and hands it to me.
My eyes widen as I examine it. It's large and luminescent and encircled by intricate silver tendrils, which should burn my fingers, but must be made with something other than the metal it resembles. They're meticulously crafted to look like waves of the sea, frozen in motion. Adorning the edges are tiny, glistening diamonds arranged to resemble droplets of water. Its worth is near priceless. Clay gasps.
But this is more,
I stammer, but am cut off when the underwater fey folds my fingers over the treasure with her shimmery fingers.
I know, but I'm counting on you to get her back.
What's stopping us from taking off with the pearl and doing nothing?
Asks Clay. The half-human side of us. The fact that we'll never get another job again if we do. My response to Clay is as much to teach him as it is to reassure our client. Do you want to go back to picking pockets in Herdan? That quiets him.
Now that's settled, I should go, Niam says, then looks at me. My father will expect me soon, but you should wait at least a quarter hour before arriving. We don't want to arrive too close together. Then, Lady Niamh leaves, the door quietly clicking closed behind her.
I continue applying the silver makeup to my exposed skin, anything that isn't covered by the simple but elegant silver gown. The Viscountess loaned me the dress for this job, since my usual clothing is plain and dark, and would definitely stand out in the midst of nobles at an auction of mystical creatures. It's another part of her payment to me. Expensive, but wise. She's very motivated to not get caught. And so am I. Clay picks up the pendant I placed on the table while I smear the paint on my arm.
This pearl will buy more pastries than I can eat in 100 years.
That's an over-exaggeration, I say. But it will feed us for a while. Perhaps we could go into hiding and take a hiatus from thieving. He puts the pendant back.
But you won't.
I might. It'll by no means be a leisurely holiday. I would use the time to learn more about my father's imprisonment and find a way to free him. Clay seems satisfied with my answer, but then says,
You didn't answer my question.
Why am I taking such a risky job?
You never take jobs that require you to be out in the open, even if you're in disguise.
He gestures at my now silver-coated face.
You prefer stealth.
I shrug. I've always wanted to ride a Cabal Ushte. Clay's mouth falls open, but quickly closes.
But you don't get to ride it. Lady Niamh won't even let us get too close. She's the only one who will ride the murderous beast.
He shudders.
Why would you even want to?
To ride across the sea? To ride across the waves with the spray and the moonlight on your face? It's been a dream since I was a youngling. Once I saw a fae ride one, and it looked so freeing. If I could break my father out of prison right now, I'd capture 2 Cabal Ushtes, and we'd ride to the far reaches of the sea, to the Star Islands. Somewhere we could be safe and ride water horses day and night until our very last breath. He stares at me, his jaw open like a fish. Finally, he shakes his head.
Did you know it glues you to its back the moment you mount it? And then it dives into the depths and drowns you so it can eat you?
Shouldn't you be reporting to your post at the stables? Clay sticks his tongue out at me, then leaves me to dream about wild water horses in peace. Chapter 2. My wings are tucked beneath the cloak that matches my dress. Despite the silver makeup and my intricately plaited hair that will signal to every fae at the auction that I come from wealth, or at least represent wealth, they'll know I'm Star Fae. Half Fae. A halfling mutt. Star Fae aren't rare, but wings on a Star Fae are, and would draw too much attention, so I keep them hidden. Besides, when they realize the Cabal Ushte was released without anyone entering the stall, they'll know it was a winged fae who released it. Best to consider every way of getting caught and cover each of them. It goes against my instinct, but I walk into the exotic menagerie on the ground floor of the manor without hiding my face or slinking in the shadows. The air is humid and fragrant, carrying the scents of tropical blooms of the summer court and the earthy aroma of rich soil that reminds me of spring fae hovels. I worry the paint on my face will melt, but feel the cooling properties of winter magic Niamh assured me was infused in it to keep it looking fresh and unmoving. Soft, ethereal music fills the air, creating a soothing and enchanting ambiance
that complements the exotic surroundings. But I know it for what it is. Something to make the Fae feel comfortable and part with more money than they intended once the auction begins. Glowing green and blue will-o'-the-wisps hover near the ground, flitting between guests as the wealthy invitees meander through the different habitats to examine the different species up for sale. The first exhibit is a typical Kate Sith, sleeping on a high branch with its tail hanging limply and a soft purr vibrating from its throat. I tilt my head as I watch it.
Will you try for this one?
A summer fae with sunshine-colored hair, wearing a flowing cerulean dress, asks.
I hear Kate Siths are excellent pets to have if you need something to sick on your enemies.
I've heard, I say, playing along. They're also excellent at evading capture. I've heard they will sit outside your enemy's window, howling all night and driving your enemy mad.
But this one looks docile enough, she says. Perhaps I'll bid for it.
I bow slightly, though I don't recognize her. Then I wish you luck. When I move on to the next exhibit, which looks empty from what I can tell, another Fae joins me and stands on my right. I've been told there should be a sylph in there, says Lady Neom. My heart crashes against my ribs in surprise. We aren't supposed to be seen together.
What is she doing?
I don't see why the caretaker is bothered to make an enclosure for a sylph, I say, again, playing along. Air spirits can't exactly be confined.
Do you see that Fae with the walking stick near the fountain?
She says quickly and quietly. Instead of turning, I use the reflection of the enclosure and search until I spot a large Fae wearing layers of clothing with a robe the color of twilight and a sash to match that glitters as he moves. He exudes an air of authority and intense observance. Or perhaps it's the dark cherry wood walking stick that exudes an air of authority and intense observance. Either way, my instinct is to keep far away from him.
Yes. That's the auction master. He has the key to Zangari's stable stall.
He has it with him? I'd been told he kept it in his rooms. This changes things. Where does he keep it? I keep the frustration from my voice.
On a cord beneath his tunic. I saw him fiddle with it. It's exactly as your young friend described the stable keys.
Clay had slipped into the stables a week earlier, searched the area, and was back out before anyone was the wiser. He spent the next 2 days drawing everything he'd seen, including the keys, all neatly stored, ready for the auction creatures to arrive. The tunic beneath his sash and robe?
That's the one. Will that be a problem? Lady Neom asks.
No problem. I've lifted things beneath more clothing before.
Good. But there's another complication I didn't tell you. Lady Neom!
A screeching female approaches us, shoots me a cursory glance, but then ignores me and embraces the Viscount's daughter tightly.
I've just heard that Prince Orion Illuminae is here.
The prince? Lady Neom's cheeks brighten with luminescence, but I barely stop myself from rolling my eyes.
Why would he be here?
I move toward the next exhibit. I shouldn't be seen with the underwater noble, and I really don't want to stand around and listen to female gossip about the crown prince. Then again, it could be a problem if the prince is at the auction, so I can't go far. Not until I know for sure if he's actually here. And what the complication is that Lady Neom mentioned before she was cut off. She might have paid us already, but this job is already more than I bargained for.
Did you see him?
Lady Niam asks her noble friend. Her tone is light, but if the High Prince is at this spring court auction, he's bound to have guards with him. Which could be another complication.
Well, no, says her friend. But Rain Hazel Falls is a reputable source.
Maybe you misheard, Ash, she suggests. The Isiara Palace probably has a menagerie to rival this one.
Maybe he wants to buy some creatures to add to it,
Ash says, but sounds doubtful. I'm sure there would have been some grand announcement if Prince Orion had arrived.
Yes, I suppose.
Besides, Prince Orion is surely planning all the details for the consort tourney. This time, Ash squeals.
Who do you think they'll choose from the underwater court? I mean, you, of course, and Princess Noreen, but who else? Do you think I have a chance?
Lady Niam laughs. I do not know who will be chosen. But the king hasn't even announced when the consort tourney will happen. It could be another decade or longer before he decides anything.
Yes, well, the prince cannot go without a mate forever.
Ash sounds disappointed.
The sooner the contestants are chosen and the tourney begins, the better it will be for Fairy.
Ha! Huh. For Fairy? Who is she kidding? I turn my head to hide my derision. Yes, the fate of the realm rests solely on the competition for the loathsome prince to pick a bride. I pity the ones chosen, but intend to free my father and disappear to somewhere far away from anything and anyone who cares about royals and bride picking, long before it begins.
Perhaps we should write the king and tell him that Fairy anxiously awaits an announcement. Lady Niam, you're a pearl. I'm going to find Rain and discuss this immediately.
When Ash is lost in the crowd again, Lady Niam walks in my direction, but her focus is behind me. When we're close, she quickly mutters,
"The auction master must show the key to the crowd before the bidding begins and place it safely in a locked box that will remain on the pedestal until it's time to fetch Zangari."
I grip her arm before she can walk away and bend down to feign picking up a pale green ribbon I took from her, making it appear as if she dropped it. Then I stand and hand it to her.
Is there a duplicate key?
No.
An intermission? A respite from the auction?
No. Did you know about these safeguards? She smiles. I paid you well. Figure it out. Chapter 3. If I had less human blood in my veins, if I thought that abandoning this job wouldn't reap irreparable consequences, or if Clay wasn't tied into this as deeply as I am, I would quit. I would sneak out before the auction begins, take the pendant, and start a new career across the realm. Perhaps I've drained what I can from the spring court. Perhaps it's time to move on. I've heard Greycrest has plenty of wealth and opportunity. But it's not in my blood to quit. So what now? I don't have enough time to strategize another plan. There are things I could have done or put in place if I had known about this ritual with the key. Distractions, glamour, duplicate keys. But there's no time for any of that. When Lady Niam mentioned a key needed to be stolen, she made it sound like it was a simple lift. I won't make the mistake of not asking enough questions in the future, but I must think quickly. Walking along a cobblestone path between exhibits, I'm journeying through a jungle of color. Tropical flowers in vivid hues of red, orange, and violet create a chaotic display against the large, lush ferns and palms that writhe in the breeze, casting violent shadows across the pathways. When I emerge on the other side, I see the auction master speaking with Viscount Watermoon near an exhibit of ravens, which I hope are just common ravens, and not the higher raven shifters called the Morrigu. I turn the other direction and head toward the owl exhibit. I knew the Viscount by Lady Niamh's description, and see the resemblance as he is her father. But seeing him here, speaking with the auction master, makes me feel the gravity of what I'm about to do. Zangiri might be Lady Niamh's beloved pet, but she's owned by the Viscount. It's his prerogative to sell her despite his daughter's pleas to auction something else. And as the high-ticket creature of the auction, the reason many of these fae are here, it's sure to cause pandemonium when they learn the prized Cabal Ushte has been stolen and Lady Niamh is gone with it. Time is vital, I realize. Stealing the key while all attention is on the auction isn't possible when all eyes will be on that podium where the key sits. I must get the key before the auction master shows it to the crowd. And I must do it now, because as soon as the auction begins and it's discovered the key to the stable is missing, everyone will know the Cabal Ushte is being stolen. Moving up the timeline also means that Clay has less time to find the Cabal Ushte's stall, and he doesn't know he has less time. I'll have less time to release the water horse, and Lady Niamh will have less time to escape through the channel. I watched the owls without actually watching them for several moments, readying myself to lift the key. It's underneath the tunic that's underneath his robe. Tricky, but not impossible. Counting down from five, I turn with purpose, but keep my expression casual, as if I'm meandering through the exhibits of the menagerie and enjoying the sights and smells. I'd prefer to do this in shadows, but I've had plenty of practice in the open market, picking pockets. Although the market is more crowded, my face wasn't covered with silver paint to obscure my appearance. A fae with a wooden tray filled with huckleberry and chamois cheese pastries passes by, and I take two, eating one in a single bite, then slowly nibble at the other. Now I must get rid of the Viscount and pluck the key. I walk to the raven exhibit, close to the two fae, but keep my attention away as I eat my pastry and study the birds. Then, after a moment, I gasp, as if I've just discovered something, and turn toward the Viscount with anger. "My lord, do you know where I can find the auction master?" The Viscount gestures to the fae next to him. "Oh, good, sir, I am outraged." Keeping my voice shrill, I pontificate about the horrors of keeping raven shifters in cages. They are only lower fae while in their raven form. As soon as they shift, they're as intelligent as you or I and should not be property to auction. All fae in the vicinity vacate the area, including the Viscount, who silently excuses himself, leaving the auction master and myself alone.
"My dear, you are mistaken,"
the auction master says when I've finally given him a chance to speak, but not until I've added tears that run down my face.
"Those are not Morrigu. They're common ravens and aren't even for sale."
Then he steps closer and pats my shoulder, consoling me.
I know,
he says, pulling out a white handkerchief from his robe. The action moves the tunic and reveals the cord that holds the key. I take the handkerchief and dab beneath my eyes, then look in horror when I pull back and see the silver makeup on the cloth.
"Oh, no,"
I shriek. I hadn't expected the makeup to wipe away so easily, but I spin it to the one advantage I can think of. I wasn't to reveal my identity. She said, the auction master squeezes my arm.
The auction won't begin until just before midnight. You'll have plenty of time to fix your disguise before it begins.
I throw my arms around his neck, as if he's just told me my father has been released from prison, then pull back with the key safely tucked inside the handkerchief. When I pull back, with a chagrined look on my face, I hold out the soiled cloth. He pushes my hand away.
You can keep it.
I nod, pretending I didn't just take an item of clothing from him, which technically could ensnare me. I don't want to enter a bargain with this auction master or any other fae. Still, I'm grateful he didn't snatch back his property and discover my crime. Heading back the way I came, along the jungle path, I search for Lady Niam, looking for her coral curls. I spot her surrounded by a group of females huddled together in chittering laughter and quick glances around the room. They're clearly engaging in some sort of gossip. I walk behind the underwater fae after making sure I catch her attention. I pat my braids as if checking to be sure they're in place, our signal to let her know I have the key. It's now or never for her to get herself to the stables. I continue walking before she can ask questions or protest the faster timeline. The plans have changed because of her. I pivot and walk toward the exit of the menagerie, holding the bottle of silver cream, indicating that I'm looking for a washroom to fix my makeup. But I head toward the stables instead. Chapter 4. Leaning into where I'm most comfortable, I slip out undetected from the menagerie by utilizing the shadows. I'm essentially invisible. I make a mental note to stay away from undercover work in the future. Playing the emotional halfling with the auction master is degrading. And before that, being subjected to conversations about the snobby prince and his ridiculous upcoming consort tourney was torturous. Shadows don't discuss princes or care if you cry. And shadows are comforting. I reach the stables without a single one of them asking who I think the prince might choose for his stupid bride-finding competition. Perching on a branch just outside the doors, I contemplate how to get Clay's attention before the fae come stampeding from the auction in search of whoever stole the stable key. If I could lie, I'd rap on the main doors with some fantastical story about needing to check on a kelpie or land horse and search for the Cabal Ashte myself. The key alone could give me an appearance of authority, and if I fixed my now streaked disguise, combined with my fine clothing, I clearly look like someone who is used to getting what she wants. But Fae can't lie. Not even half Fae like me. Time is ticking, so I glide down to the ground, straighten my shoulders, flex my wings, and knock. Then listen. I hear shuffling on the other side of the door, then it's pushed open a crack.
We're not permitted to let anyone inside, says a high-pitched, nasally voice. Who are you?
I got this from the auctioneer, I say, holding up the key. It's the key that opens the stable for the Cabal Ashte that will be bid on tonight. I'm merely stating the truth. I'm spouting facts about the key and where I got it in hopes they'll assume I'm here on official business. The door slams in my face. Stepping back, I study my surroundings, looking for a way to sneak. The door splits open again.
You'll have to excuse Slatter, says a familiar voice. She didn't realize that if you have the key, you're here to care for the Cabal Ashte.
Clay.
Come, follow me.
I slip inside, and Clay shuts the door behind me.
What are you doing? It's not time yet,
he whispers, his words rapid fire.
I haven't even—
Long story. But we can't wait. It must be now. Lady Niam should be on her way to the channel.
But Amber Lee, I don't even know where they're holding Zangari. I thought you weren't supposed to be here until midnight.
Come, we'll both look. I pull at his hand and drag him with me, but Clay digs his heels into the floorboards to stop me.
The others will get suspicious if they see you,
he whispers, looking just down the corridor, as if several of them are waiting nearby, ready to eavesdrop. Maybe they are, but I'm leaning on my skills of covertness to keep from getting caught. I don't sense that we're being watched. Clay takes a moment to think.
Look, go back outside.
He shoves me back toward the door.
I'll keep looking from inside the stable. The doors are made to be opened by an underwater fae on the outside side anyway. We'll save time and avoid you getting caught if you're not in here.
What areas have you already checked?
The northwest corner and along the west wall to about the halfway point. I'll continue from there.
I give him a sharp nod and slip out and immediately fly to the roof, perching on the side away from the manor, away from the eyes at the auction. Fortunately, the channel is on the far side, so if any fae step out of the menagerie, they won't see me unless they walk around the stables. Crouching down, I inch forward until I'm looking over the wide, rushing channel. The water roars in my ears, and the breeze lifts the spray even this high up. For a moment, I allow myself to imagine what it would feel like to ride across the waves, with the mist in my face and the wind lifting loose pieces of my hair and the thrill of a speed I don't control. Pushing the feeling away, I must focus. I flutter down from the roof. Hovering in the air, I examine a row of faded blue doors that open right up to the channel. But none of them have windows or a way to see what creature is inside each one. Their only identifier is a word, or a name painted in white across the top. Renner, Alyssa, North, Roman, Trotter, Colt, Woodscourt, Kang. But no Zangari. Although Zangari is meant to only be temporarily held in the stables until she's auctioned tonight. These creatures could all belong to the owner of the stables. Flying closer to the doors, I press a palm on the one labeled Trotter and lean close to listen for sounds behind it. But the roaring of the channel below drowns out everything. Then I hear it. A knocking. Then pounding on one of the doors, the one labeled North. I fly to it, then knock in a pattern. The pattern is repeated. It must be Clay. Unfolding the key from the handkerchief, I'm careful not to let it tumble into the water below, then grip the key and put it into the slot and turn. With a click, the door is unlocked, and I take a breath before lifting the latch that will release the door. Because on the other side is the dangerous, mythical beast of my daydreams and nightmares. And I don't trust it around Clay for long. I allow the door to swing open, and the air escapes my lungs as I'm finally face to face with the creature. She's breathtaking. Her hide is seafoam green with an aquamarine-colored mane. She looks like a land horse, as she's in her land horse form, but has the crimson-red eye, like all Cabal Ashtays do. I whip behind me, looking for a sign of Lady Niam waiting for Zangari's release, but see only the dark, rushing water below.
What are you waiting for?
Clay Whisper shouts. He's behind the water horse.
She won't patiently wait while you stand in the way of her and the water.
As if knowing what Clay said, Zangari stomps her hoof and snorts with impatience. Lifting my hands above me, as if that alone will keep her in her stall, I look behind me again. Still no sign of Lady Niam.
Amberlee,
Clay hisses.
Let her go!
I see no other option but to do what he says. Zangari has spotted her freedom and would easily trample over me to get to it. So, ducking to the side, I move out of her way and watch as she leaps in one bound into the channel. The instant she hits the water, she changes. Her nose lengthens and hooks, and I see a glint of her teeth sharpen. Her hide shifts to a dark green, and her mane lengthens and changes to the texture of seaweed. There's something trailing behind her, a rope or chain that was attached to her back hoof. Clay screams. I spin in time to see a glint of something wrapped around his ankle, just as he's yanked from Zangari's stall and plummets into the channel, trailing the now free and deadly Cabal Ashte. Chapter 5. Horror and panic surge inside me. My impulse is to dive after him. If I use all my strength, perhaps I can save my friend from drowning or being eaten by the carnivorous water horse. No. Be smart. I'm a winged fae, and I've never been in the sea, let alone learned to swim. I'll be more of a hindrance than a help if I go after him. Still, I'm helpless as his form is hurled forward at the mercy of the creature. I do the only thing I can, fly above the water and look for any signs of him. But he's gone. Disappeared. After a terrifying moment, the Cabal Ashte's head lifts from the water a stone's throw ahead of me. Clay surfaces, his arms wild, but he coughs. Alive.
Zangari!
Lady Niam shouts from the bank of the canal. Relief floods through me, knowing she made it. But can she save Clay?
She's pulled him in!
I shout at the Fae as her water horse goes under again. Without another word, Lady Niam dives into the water, and other than the rushing water of the channel and the howling of a Ku-Sith in the distance, the night goes quiet for a wings-beating, pulse-hammering, breath-stolen moment. What will I do without my partner? My accomplice? My friend who has become like a little brother, a family member to me? Life will go on, but not mine. I'll grieve every day for the remaining centuries of life I have left to live, for the boy I took under my wings but couldn't keep alive. Lady Niam resurfaces alone and shouts,
"Where?"
It's not in my blood to give up. I fly further down the channel, my head snapping back and forth as I look for any sign of them. Finally, I see the dark hair of Clay resurface briefly. He takes a gasp of air before the Cabal Ashte pulls him under again. I point and cry,
"There!"
Lady Niam dives. Now, the only thing I can do is pray to Veho that Lady Niam will find him and save my dear friend. The god of the wind hears my plea, because after I utter the prayer, the soaked curls of Lady Niam surface along with her beloved Zangari, and sitting behind her, on the back of the dangerous Cabal Ashte, is the dripping, gasping, hair plastered to his face, Clay. I nearly shriek with joy, but contain my enthusiasm. We're not quite out of danger yet. At any moment, the auction master will learn the key has gone missing, and we'll have a crowd of outraged Fae on our heels. We must flee and get far away quickly.
Clay, leap from her back, I say. We don't have much time. I'll help you to shore.
He can't, says the underwater lady.
Once mounted on a Cabal Ashte,
Your body bonds to it. He can't just leap from it. Then how will he get off? I try, but fail to hide the edge of panic in my voice. The Honorable Lady Niam Watermoon smiles as she strokes the neck of her beloved animal and says, "She must let him go." "When will that be?" "Don't fret. I'll keep him safe," she assures me. "I swear it." Fae cannot lie. And a promise given but broken will have consequences far beyond what even I can inflict. My stomach uncoils, but still, I cannot bring myself to leave him.
"You go, Amberly," Clay says. "I'll meet you at the hill."
"The hill," I repeat. "Rosewind. We haven't been there in ages, but it might be time to move on and away from where our faces might be recognized, silver paint or not." I watch as they gallop across the channel and disappear into the darkness. Part of me is envious, though I'm sure Clay won't see it quite the same way. Now that the danger is past and I know Clay will meet me in Rosewind, I envy him. I've always wanted to ride a Cabal Ushte. I vow to myself that I will someday. Once they're safely away from detection, I turn toward the manor, listening for sounds of outrage and anger, but hear nothing. Glancing up at the sky, at the half moon and the stars, I realize that time did not pass as quickly as I thought. The mingling and socializing before the auction might still be underway. They might not have yet realized the key is missing. Which means, if I return it before they notice it's gone missing, it'll give Lady Niam and Clay, and myself, even more time to get far away before the theft is discovered. So, I fly back to the menagerie, landing long before I can be spotted, and using shadows to sneak back to the nearest powder room. From my pocket, I pull out the silver jar, then smear the cool paint over my face and neck and arms once more. Then, feeling satisfied that I've successfully put my facade back together, with a quick glance at my reflection and covering my wings again, I walk out, but find myself alone. Not a single Fae is around.
"The bidding will begin in just a few moments," the booming voice of the auction master says in the heart of the menagerie, and my heart jumps. If I don't get the key to him now, and with hundreds of eyes watching him, I'll have no time to escape. Thinking quickly, I walk toward the auction and lift the handkerchief of a Fae I pass by. Then, instead of locating a seat like the others, I march up to the front and ignore the hammering of my heart.
"It's you,"
the auction master says when I approach him. His arms are outstretched, as if ready to welcome me in another hug. He recognized me. That's not good. I could hug him again and attempt to replace the key on its cord, but getting it beneath his robe like before would be near impossible. So I pretend I don't notice his invitation for an embrace.
"I wanted to gift you this handkerchief," I say, holding out the one I just stole, then flash a smile. "I don't want to enter a bargain accidentally by keeping yours."
"Of course not."
He smiles, too, but there's a layer of frustration or disappointment behind it. Perhaps his intention was to hold me in a bargain. He takes the handkerchief, and when he slips it into his robe, I drop the key to the ground. It clatters against the cobblestone. He notices, too.
"Oh,"
I say, then reach down and pick it up, then immediately hand it to him.
"You dropped this."
When he takes the key from my fingers, his eyes narrow. Does he suspect? I wonder and calm my racing heart.
Well, aren't you a good fae to have around? He says. Do you have a name?
I know what he's getting at. He suspects something. But he doesn't know for sure, so he can't accuse me of anything. Not one I'm willing to give. I flash another smile.
Ah, yes, you've disguised your face, and I see that you took the time to replace your makeup.
He grips his chin with one hand.
Then I'll call you the Silver Shadow.
I pivot on my heel and walk back into the audience, slipping into a seat near the back as the auction master begins. I wait until two of the creatures are won before slipping out and disappearing into the night. I'm halfway to the hill before I imagine I hear the faint cries of outrage. Epilogue. When I climb up Wild Rose Hill, Clay is already waiting. I'd stopped to clean off my face and change my clothing at one of our hideouts. One I'd cleared out last week, not leaving evidence of our identities. Clay is soaking wet, but he has a grin from ear to ear.
Did you miss me?
Instead of responding, I flutter to the grass. I sit next to him, tuck up my legs, and wrap my arms around my knees. How about we let things cool off and lie low here in Rosewind, I say. We can stay in our safe houses and just enjoy our win.
We don't have to move to the summer court.
The summer court is the last place I want to go. Too many memories. Too great a chance that I might run into the High Prince. We'll stay here in spring, I say, wrapping my arm around him in a side hug. Someday we'll have to move on. I don't add that we might have to part ways someday too. I'll make sure Clay is prepared to thieve on his own long before that ever happens. But not today. I hope you enjoyed listening to Silver Wings and Shadows by Joanna Reeder, narrated by Corinne Norton. If you want to read more by Joanna, go to joannareeder.com to find more of her books. I will have a direct link in the show notes to her series, Courting Fae Thieves and Crowns, where 15 Fae hopefuls vie for the crown along with the prince's heart, only there's a spy planted in their midst by the king. Today's short story takes place in that world, so I think you'll be excited to hear that Amber Lee is that spy. This month, we are running a dragon-themed audiobook giveaway, which includes a 3-month Audible subscription, plus 4 fantastic audiobooks: Dragon Mage by M.L. Spencer, Dragon Blood by Lindsay Buroker, Miss Percy's Pocket Guide to the Care and Feed of British Dragons by Quenby Olson, and the entire Keeper Origins trilogy by J.A. Andrews. If you want a chance to win, go to findingfantasyreads.com/giveaway to enter. It feels good to be back, doesn't it? Have a wonderful week. Thank you all for listening, and happy reading.